You are listening to Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. Welcome to the Thunderbolt for March 22nd, 2019. I am replaying the second longest Thunderbolt I've ever recorded this week. This show is nomination number 2 for the Thunderbolt's Most Evil Person in History Award, and it is a total of 44 minutes, which means that it barely fits into the new show format, which means we need to skip the usual opening bells and whistles and get right down to business. Keep in mind that the views expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. Enjoy.
All right. So as far as producing this radio show goes, I guess all I have to say is that saving the world may be a fun job, but somebody's got to do it. And I've got a heck of a thunderbolt coming up for you now, and Grandpa was particularly fond of this one, so I'm going to go ahead and let him introduce it. So welcome the toothless old Grandpa.
Yes, sir, yes, sir. Thank you kindly. This is the toothless old Grandpa here coming at you. For due to popular demand, the Thunderbolt is proud to not only announce a new nomination for the Thunderbolt's Most Evil Person in History Award, but this week's nomination actually has two parts. For the Thunderbolt, we'll be honoring two brothers, both named Dulles. The Thunderbolt is nominating both of these men for this non-prestigious award because the brothers Dulles were a team, and one or the other brother could never have individually accomplished hardly any of the numerous and incredible achievements that they realized as a result of their collective efforts. So here we go with nomination number 2 for the Thunderbolts Most Evil Person in History Award.
Well, thank you, Grandpa. Yes, we have John Foster and Alan Dulles. Now, the only reason the name Dulles might be familiar to the average American is because the central airport serving the Washington, D.C. area is named after one or the other or both of them. Now, when I say that the brothers Dulles spent 30 years as corporate lawyers for the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell, and that the brothers Dulles specialized in corrupting third world leaders for the sake of their corporate clients, please do not just assume that this represents nothing more than business as usual and start yawning or switching over to NPR or something. You need to understand, in crony corporate fascist world of the mid-20th century, the brothers Dulles were the metaphorical equivalents of rock stars. They were not mere corruptors of third world governments. They were the pioneers of the art and practice of corrupting third world governments. Yes, the brothers Dulles represented the cutting edge in this brave new world of imperialism. Rather than bothering with the direct political control as practiced by the European imperialists, the Americans instead came up with a unique system of indirect control, i.e., rather than stationing permanent and expensive armies to oppress poor people, the rich Americans simply bought educated and armed locals to do their dirty work for them. Yes, people like the brothers Dulles were the recruiters. They say, hey, bro, do you want to play ball and be showered with gold? Or do you want to go all populist on us and get showered with cluster bombs? So personality-wise, Alan Dulles and John Foster Dulles could have been the definition of an odd couple. John Foster was so arrogant and uptight and condescending that even his closest friends did not like him. Future British PM Harold Macmillan said this of John Foster Dulles. His speech was slow, but it easily kept pace with his thoughts. Winston Churchill once referred to John Foster Dulles as the only bull I know that carries his own china shop around with him. You gotta love the British insult. Now, Alan Dulles, on the other hand, bedazzled all who met him. He was a charismatic charmer in the first degree. He was a wine connoisseur. He was a tennis player. He was a master seducer. He was a bon vivant man around town. He was a lover of Claire Booth Luce, and he famously partied with and seduced the Queen of Greece whilst he was at CIA headquarters. So back in the early days, Alan Dulles was himself the CIA's best PR.
Corn's on the phone for Freebird, said Willie, don't cry the child. Hitler's on the phone for Berlin, says I'm gonna make you a star. My captain Valentina's your man's patrol, but all the English bombers are forcing Bilal at the 12. They'll all be here.
Most people in those days weren't real clear on what the CIA even was.
They hope they're dependent from the sky, like some heavy metal fruit.
But if someone like Alan Dulles was running it,
wait to tell,
then it must be a wonderful thing indeed.
Thus they live, then I might die.
Thus, almost all scrutiny of the CIA usually ended with Alan Dulles.
Energy of disaster from the rate of climb. Sometimes I think he'll be lost outside. But there's no reward for failure, but dead. So watch me in mirrors, keep it on a black path.
Now this was fortunate, for there are already all kinds of thoroughly nasty stuff going on behind Alan Dulles' charming smile. Now be clear here, this charismatic teddy bear was arguably personally responsible for more innocent deaths and more pure evil than any other player of the 20th century.
These bombs are rapping way too chill. What's these English will live, then I might die. What's they live, then I might die. ME-262 prints of temperature.
Alan Dulles was buried neck deep in both of the Kennedy assassinations and in their subsequent cover-ups. And importantly, while the brothers Dulles had personalities that were polar opposites, their worldviews were exactly identical. Yes, the destruction of our civilization has been a team effort requiring vast efforts by countless people in myriad locales and stations. But if we're going to assign responsibility for the level of humanity's current misery index and the level of homicidal insanity that it represents,
then hope they're dependent from the sky like some heavy metal fruit.
We're to assign responsibility for this ridiculous mess into a single pair of hands. Or in this case, into a single twin pair of hands. And there are few people who hold more responsibility for the current state of affairs these days than the brothers Dulles. Brothers Dulles. Dulles metaphorically wrote the book, and they literally set the mold. Now, the brothers Dulles suffered the same personality disorder that seems to be a job requirement for fascists, i.e., the fairly common delusional state known as beneficism.
Bombers at 12 o'clock.
Now, a fanatic is someone who has absolute, unquestioned, unquestionable assurance that they are 100% correct in all of their assessments of any and all given situations, and that their view of any and all situations is far superior to any other view that could possibly be presented by anyone else. These people firmly believe things, and their belief is unquestioned, even if there is no supporting evidence, and often even in the face of contradictory evidence. And of course, one of the hallmarks of this derangement is that all counterviews must be marginalized or eliminated. It just stood to reason. Especially since this entire worldview is wholly dependent upon an ability to completely delude oneself into believing a large number and a wide variety of things that are totally insane. This delusion is much more difficult to maintain if someone is in your face telling you that you are insane. And so, people who speak truth to power in this context are always marginalized or eliminated if possible. Anyway, the non-infamous brothers Dulles were the original architects of the framework over which the contradictory, murderous, and insane nature of American foreign policy is draped to this very day. Now, the biggest influence upon the budding young destroyers of worlds was their grandfather, John Watson Foster. Now, John Foster was, among many other things, the Secretary of State of the United States during the 1890s. This means that John Foster was right on the front lines at the birth of the modern American imperialism machine. Yes, this was when the attentions of the American juggernaut shifted from brutally expropriating the land and treasure of our own indigenous population to brutally expropriating the land and treasure of people in foreign lands. So this change eventually manifested into the Spanish-American War, wherein the United States invaded and occupied numerous Spanish possessions, such as Cuba, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Philippines, whereupon they installed brutal dictatorships to properly marshal and control the, quote, manpower needed to do whatever nasty work was required to assure a constant torrent of cash into the coffers of the clients of the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell. Now, the campaign in the Philippines was especially brutal, involving the mass slaughter of large numbers of civilians amongst a lengthy list of other outrages and crimes against humanity. The 7th Cavalry, which is George Custer's old unit, was still fairly fresh from conducting the Wounded Knee Massacre just a few years earlier, and they easily exported their highly successful techniques for genocidal slaughtering of indigenous people to the Philippines. And Grandpa John Foster was an enthusiastic practitioner of this doctrine of manifest destiny, which stated with great authority that Europeans were obviously destined to bring enlightenment to the world. Therefore, There were no ethical or moral problems with anything that they had to do in order to achieve that destiny. White people were not only compelled, but indeed were obligated to spread the enlightened worldview of the clients of the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell to the ignorant savages of the Third World. Therefore, their national treasures could then be more efficiently drained into the bank accounts of the clients of the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell, which is where they belonged in the first place. See? Now, John Washington Foster was, in fact, the very first American Secretary of State to help overthrow a Third World government for this purpose, when he helped to engineer the occupation and eventual annexation of the Hawaiian Islands in 1893. This was sort of an imperialist baby step before the big Spanish-American show coming just a few years later. What happened there was that some American businessmen in Hawaii spuriously claimed that there was an imminent threat to American lives and property, thus justifying the landing of American troops on sovereign Hawaiian soil. These troops were supposedly there to prevent violence, but the only thing they prevented was the ability of the Hawaiians to defend their island from a bunch of rich, drunk Americans with guns who took advantage of this state of affairs by simply taking the place over by force of arms. Queen Liliuokalani was arrested for treason when she tried to take her own country back, and she eventually signed abdication papers in return for the promise that the Americans would not execute her and all of her friends. And John Watson Foster, the grandfather of the brothers Dulles, oversaw all of this. And thus were the doctrines of manifest destiny and American exceptionalism drilled into the forming young minds of the brothers Dulles. So that took care of the political justifications. So this left the morality and the ethics. No problem. For in addition to being lawyers, the brothers Dulles were also, of course, Christians. Their family, in fact, contained a seemingly overabundance of ministers and preachers. Their father was a Presbyterian clergyman, for instance. Uncles, grandfathers, and nephews. Many were called, and all were chosen. Missionaries, just returning from places like China and Syria, were common visitors to the Dulles home during their idyllic childhoods in upstate New York. The Dulles family Calvinist worldview meant that everything could very conveniently be divided into strictly segregated camps of good and evil, and never shall the twain meet. You are either good or you're evil. This meant they had all of the moral justification they needed to do whatever nastiness they felt was necessary to accomplish this perceived good. Anything that furthered the interests of good was by definition good. Even when it was itself evil. And being the good Christians that they were, the brothers Dulles were fully qualified to make such determinations, and thus saving everyone else all the bother. So as mentioned, the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell were the original economic hitmen who bullied and bribed and coerced third world governments into doing whatever their clients wanted them to do. And for decades, Sullivan and Cromwell were the grand masters of this. Every major multinational corporation that had operations or interests in foreign countries hired Sullivan and Cromwell to deal with both the American State Department and with the various local governments that they worked with. And it is something of a misnomer, in fact, to refer to Sullivan and Cromwell as a legal firm. For if you did happen to need a divorce, or if you wanted to drop a will, they could probably find some intern to do that. But such things were not why people hired Sullivan and Cromwell. No, you hired Sullivan and Cromwell if you wanted to sell flour in Guyana at a time when Guyana wanted to protect their local food producers and thus charge a heavy tariff on imported flour. Now, protecting local industries, especially for vital things like food, is an age-old and universally practiced policy. Every government that has ever existed has practiced various forms of this. However, it's a pain in the ass if you're a foreigner trying to sell flour in Guyana. The solution?
Happy.
Simple. Call Sullivan and Cromwell. And that's the name. And away go troubles. Down the drain. Yes, all you gotta do is send the good John Foster Dulles to Guyana. And lo and behold, just a few short days later, the Guyanese government will announce that they are eliminating trade tariffs on imported flour. So now you are free to dump tons of your heavily government-subsidized flour onto the Guyanese market and completely take it over. Yippee! The brothers Dulles very successfully accomplished many similar such things all over the planet for over 30 years. Simplicity was the name of the Dulles game. Since they already knew everything, this meant that their judgments were never clouded by the opinions or views of experts or diplomats or anyone else for that matter.
Happy.
They were the ultimate determination of good and evil. In their world, everything was very simple. The corporate clients of the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell represented good, while anyone that opposed the corporate clients of the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell represented evil.
Happy?
Yes, they were happy. It was a nice, simple, uncomplicated, black and white view of the world that served both the brothers Dulles and resultantly the corporate clients of the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell quite well over the decades. Everyone else, though, not so much. Anyway, great-grandpa killing Indians in the name of Jesus led to grandpa overthrowing the Hawaiian Islands, which led to the brothers Dulles attempting to impose absolute American authority over every nook and cranny on the planet at the dawning of the nuclear age. The result was that the clients of the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell made bank. Literally. Except for a select few white Americans and their paid lackeys, though. Everyone else pretty much sucked rocks in hell. However, these 30 years merely represented a warm-up. The brothers Dulles were not themselves plutocrats. They were merely the highest ranking and best paid of the small armies of lackeys and toadies that served the interests of the plutocrats. After 30 years of private service, it was now time for the brothers Dulles to achieve their true potential. Yes, the big show came when the brothers Dulles entered public life. Under Dwight Eisenhower, John Foster Dulles became the Secretary of State, while Allen Dulles became the director of the newly formed Central Intelligence Agency. Since everybody was so busy liking Ike as they watched him playing golf on the newfangled TV machines, the brothers Dulles had pretty much free rein to operate their little fiefdoms unhindered. Yes, their decades of experience bullying poor people for the benefit of rich people was about to serve the clients of Sullivan and Cromwell very well indeed. Yes, sirree, Bob, with the advent of big government and big military, it was time to institute the permanent wartime economy.
And we need to take a quick station break. We'll be right back. And now back to nomination number 2 for the official Thunderbolt Most Evil Persons in History Award.
Yes, indeed. It was time to throw down a good old-fashioned, new-fashioned Cold War. Yippee! For the entire time that they were in government, the brothers Dulles pretty much perpetually had three balls in the air at any given time. They never ended one covert op without beginning two others. Yes, those busy boys orchestrated operations in Indonesia, India, Egypt, the Congo, Greece, Cuba, Vietnam, amongst many, many others. And they were firm believers in destroying villages in order to save them. Now, all of these operations appeared to be discrete and isolated incidents at the time. No one had the slightest clue that every one of these incidents was initiated and carried out by their own public officials using their own tax dollars. However, upon taking their offices, their very first priority was to settle a couple of old scores. And for the brothers Dulles, revenge was sweet. During their decades at the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell, the brothers Dulles enjoyed almost complete success. They seemed almost literally to have the Midas touch. However, right at the end of their careers as Sullivan and Cromwell, the brothers Dulles had actually suffered two humiliating and ignominious defeats, which they never forgot, and as subsequent events proved, they never forgave. Their first humiliation was in Iran. So if you truly wish to understand the relationship between the United States and Iran, here is its root. In the 1950s,
Those Iranian savages had the chutzpah to elect a prime minister named Mohammad Mossadegh. That's Mossadegh. Now, Mr. Mossadegh had the chutzpah to nationalize Iran's oil reserves so that the wealth could be used to build Iran rather than to fatten the bank accounts of rich foreigners. The elected Iranian parliament backed him unanimously in this decision. Now, since those rich foreigners they were talking about were also the clients of the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell, and since it was to prevent things just such as this that these clients paid the very big bucks to the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell, then this was a major black eye for the brothers Dulles. Then, at around the same time, the people of Guatemala appeared ready to elect a president who insisted that United Fruit, one of the oldest, richest, and most important clients of the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell, this possible president was insisting that United Fruit must begin treating the workers on their banana plantations with respect and with living wages, and with the freedom to organize rather than brutally exploiting them in slave-like conditions. Yet in spite of attempts by the brother Stolas to corrupt and or rig the election, Jacobo Arbenz became the president of Guatemala. Arbenz introduced a new constitution. Censorship was brought to an end. Men and women were declared equal before the law. Racial discrimination was declared a crime. Higher education became free of government control. Private monopolies were banned. Workers were assured a 40-hour week. And labor unions were legalized. Every one of these policies were opposed by the previous American-backed government and, more importantly, opposed by the clients of the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell. Thus, losing this election was another big black eye for the brothers Dulles. But never fear.
As soon as the brothers Dulles took over the State Department and the Central Intelligence Agency, their very first order of business was to right these outrageous wrongs.
Within months of the brothers Dulles taking their government posts, both Mohammad Mossadegh and Jacobo Arbenz had been overthrown by violent military coups and replaced with militaristic right-wing dictatorships who had the proper respect for the Sullivan and Cromwell American way of doing things. In Iran, Alan Dulles had dispatched the grandson of Theodore Roosevelt, a gentleman named Kermit Roosevelt, as the CIA's man on the ground to organize things.
By the time we made it up to level 4, we found the first mate lying on the floor. I listened real hard to her dying breath. Then the floor gave way and she fell to her death. She said, "You better stay low, you gotta move fast. Remember to shield your eyes from any nuclear blast. Get back to the ship."
In this effort, Mr. Roosevelt pioneered many tactics and strategies that are still practiced to this day.
Finally found the sergeant on level 3. With the automata behind him that he couldn't see. I listened real hard to him because I knew a robot was about to rip the sergeant too. He said it won't be long, you guys are almost there. Everything will be alright if you don't run out of air. Then I felt the grip of a mechanical hand.
His bag of dirty tricks included organizing and financing competing pro-monarchy and anti-monarchy mobs to fight each other in the streets in order to foster the appearance of chaos and violent anarchy. And Mr. Roosevelt's efforts succeeded. Sullivan and Cromwell triumphed over Iran. Mr. Mossadegh was replaced by America's very good buddy, Shah Reza Pahlavi. And the Shah returned to Iran's policy of allowing Western oil companies to loot Iran. And thus, the brothers Dulles succeeded in overthrowing a popular, democratically elected head of state and replacing him with a brutal dictatorship. And they totally got away with it. For the next 20 years, the Shah ruled Iran with an iron fist. He required constant large cast infusions from the American taxpayer in order to maintain the very large and very brutal security force that he had to maintain, since the Iranian people knew full well what had been done to them. The Iranian people, in fact, eventually overthrew the Shah in a revolution, despite his American money. The Iranian people knew full well who had been backing their oppressor, and that is why the Iranians loathe the United States government to this day. Virtually no Americans know of this history. Everyone in the Middle East knows this history by heart. And as for Guatemala, exactly the same deal. The new right-wing coup government took over and was immediately recognized by the good old USA. This new government immediately reversed Mr. Arbenz's policy toward United Fruit and the torture, disenfranchisement, and murder of union organizers, college professors, and anyone to the left of Genghis Khan resumed.
We've lost our interest in those little games we used to play.
I believe the subsequent histories of both Iran and Guatemala speak for themselves.
You say things you don't mean. I think things I'll never say.
At the time, though, the operations in Iran and Guatemala both seemed to be spectacular successes.
Get down.
The evil people were gone.
Go down.
And the profits were once again rolling in.
Get down.
To the coffers of the clients of the law firm.
Go down.
Sullivan and Cromwell. Now, another very important thing to understand about the reign of the brothers Dulles, John Foster Dulles' strategy for negotiating with enemies was that he did not do it.
We could lose it anywhere, from the alley to the bedroom floor.
He absolutely refused to talk with any representative from any country that was on his shite list.
With your hands all over me, I forget what the hell we're fighting for.
He would present a list of demeaning and impossible demands that the offending country must carry out before Mr. Dulles would deign to speak to them. Remember, this man drew us to Dwight D. Eisenhower's Secretary of State. He was our nation's top diplomat.
Get down.
Right after Stalin's death in 1952, the interim Soviet government sent peace feelers toward the Western powers, i.e. France, England, and the United States. And they suggested a major peace summit. France and England were all for it, but John Foster Dulles was against it. And so, it never happened. The Cold War could possibly have been nipped in the bud right there. Now, Alan Dulles helped orchestrate the Kennedy assassination, partly because Kennedy and Khrushchev were moving to end the Cold War and usher in an era of peace. The clients of Sullivan and Cromwell did not want peace. They were addicted to war profits. And as far as John Foster Dulles' refusal to negotiate, Mr. Dulles was clear on his reasoning. His overall strategy depended upon demonizing the enemy. They were subhuman and fit only for domination or extermination. According to Mr. Dulles, if you started talking to them, that conveyed the message that they were actually human, like you or I.
We don't have self-respect, but we're sure gonna have our fun.
And another thing the brothers Dulles refused to tolerate was neutralism. You were either with us or you were against us. There were dozens of countries in South and Central America and Africa that was just emerging from colonialism and World War II, and many of them did not give a flying fig about America's beef with the Soviet Union. They were busy trying to recover from centuries of disaster and colonialism, and they just wanted to build themselves a country. They were focused on domestic affairs and didn't care about whether the United States or the Soviet Union killed each other. However, their refusal to allow the clients of the law firm Sullivan and Cromwell to move their country proved that they were secretly communists. And thus many of these also received the special Dulles Deluxe coup d'etat a la American taxpayer special. Yes, the brothers Dulles were very busy boys during those peaceful and idyllic years of the 1950s. At the time, I was myself a small child watching a lot of Leave It to Beaver on the television machine. Now, the Dulles brothers' strategy, of course, contains numerous very serious flaws that would be obvious to many seven-year-olds, as long as they weren't insane. Yet many of these strategies and tactics are still popular with certain American policymakers to this day. Our country has paid and will continue to pay dearly into the foreseeable future for these policies. Others have paid much more than we have, though.
Happy?
Happy?
In addition to the tens of millions of deaths and unimaginable human suffering that the brothers Dulles' policies directly caused, evidently the very concept of blowback had never even crossed their Dulles minds. They never mentioned it in their writings, and they certainly never prepared for it. Now they've left us holding their bag. Thanks, bros.
I'll be a turd in an open can of peaches. I think it's time to get to work now, son. You got a calendar for us?
Come on, Grandpa. Wouldn't be a Thunderbolt without a calendar.
And thus ends part one of the Thunderbolt, Why You Should Be Upset. Next comes part two, What Can Be Done About It. Across Cascadia, the masses are arising in response to
the Olympia Action Alert
for the week of March 23rd through March 29th, 2019. It's the Olympia Action Alert! For Saturday, March 23rd, it's a barbecue and tenants' rights training. This will be from 2 to 5 p.m. at 129 Percival Street, Northwest. And this event was organized by the tenants of the South Sound. Do you feel like your landlord may be breaking laws with fees, refused repairs, or other mistreatments, but you're unsure what the law actually is? Well, folks will be coming to learn all about it with a lawyer from the Northwest Justice Project. We'll be starting the day off with a barbecue, and there will be vegan options. And after a while of eating and getting to know some other tenants, we'll sit down and learn about the basics of tenants' law. Rent is theft. We'll see you there. The only contact information I have is a Facebook event. So again, this is a barbecue and tenants' rights training. Saturday, March 23rd, from 2 to 5 p.m. at 129 Percival Street, Northwest.
It's the Olympia Action Alert!
For Wednesday, March 27th, it's an introduction to homelessness and encampments. This will be from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Lacey Timberland Library, 4101 Timberline Drive, Northeast in Lacey. This workshop will be presented by Just Housing, a local grassroots activist and advocacy group that organizes to support the basic human rights and needs of houseless community members. Participants in this workshop can expect to learn basic information about homelessness, social services, and encampments in Thurston County. The workshop will also focus on policies, practices, and issues related to the criminalization of homelessness in Lacey and beyond. Further, folks will learn more about Just Housing, who we are, what we advocate, and why, and how you can get involved. So again, this is an introduction to homelessness and encampments, Wednesday, March 27th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Lacey Timberland Library, 4101 Timberline Drive, Northeast in Lacey.
It's the Olympia Action Alert!
For Thursday, March 28th, it is Legislator Letter Writing Night. This will be from 2:30 to 4:30 p.m. at the Lacey Timberland Library, 500 College Street Southeast in Lacey. And this event was organized by Planned Parenthood Votes Northwest and Hawaii. Folks will be joining Planned Parenthood volunteers, supporters, and fellow activists as we write letters to our legislators urging them to support reproductive and sexual health care education for all of Washington. So again, this is Legislator Letter Writing Night, Thursday, March 28th, from 2:30 to 4:30 p.m. at the Lacey Timberland Library, 500 College Street Southeast. Also on Thursday, March 28th, we have Love for a Change 2019. This will be from 6 to 9 p.m. at the South Puget Sound Community College, 2011 Mottman Road, Southwest. And that will be in Building 27. Mottman is spelled M-O-T-T-M-A-N. And this event was organized by Sidewalk. A door that locks, a kitchen to cook in, the basic dignity of a private bathroom. Every person in our community deserves these things. Since 2012, Sidewalk volunteers have helped over 1,300 people escape homelessness and enjoy the dignity and stability of a new home. Please join Sidewalk at our 2019 Love for a Change annual gala. Hosted by Lauren O'Neill, you'll be in for a magical evening of live entertainment, delicious drinks, fabulous food courtesy of Nineveh, and the best dessert dash in town. Together, our community will open its hearts to declare that everyone deserves a safe place to call home. Drinks and social hour are at 6 p.m. Dinner and the program begin at 7. People who wish to purchase a table or in becoming a table captain are emailing Kento, K-E-N-T-O, at walkthurston.org. People who wish to provide sponsorship opportunities are emailing Eric, E-R-I-C, at walkthurston.org. So again, this is Love for a Change 2019 Gala, Thursday, March 28th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at the South Puget Sound Community College, building number 27, 2011 Mottman Road Southwest. And that is it for the calendar this week. And that is it for the Thunderbolt this week. I have a lot of fun making these. I hope you have fun listening. So I have time for a bonus tip of the day before we head out. We really should stop allowing our public officials to get away with murder. Peace. We'll see you next week. The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt. Nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com. And we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day. And a quick note here. The Thunderbolt is on Facebook, where you can find links to the show and to the show notes. Or you can go to radioforall.net. That's radio4all.net. Where you can also find the show notes, as well as a year's worth of downloadable episodes of the Thunderbolt.
Thank you very much.